It's time!
Happy New Metal! The Eagle rises again! 29-0.
That's it! He's got the shot!
Nate Diaz!
He's done it!
He's done it! All over! Nate Diaz beats Conor McGregor!
What a night, ladies and gentlemen! What a night!
Rose Namajunas is trying to close the show!
She was doing a great job of faith!
We're listening to Pound for Pound, ringside for all things MMA and boxing on WFUV Sports.
Guys, UFC Vancouver was last weekend. I'm Travis Hayden. I'm joined by my guests.
Ethan Bess.
Ryan Deptula.
Guys, UFC Vancouver. Me and Ethan had a little talk the other day that said, okay, on this show, we may or may not go in depth about UFC Vancouver. It depends on what type of card it's going to be.
Absolutely. I did remember saying that.
And this was one of the most infuriating cards I have ever watched of all time.
Talk about it.
What are the referees, what is the commission doing? Because this was the worst officiated card I have ever seen in my life. And it started right at the prelims with Drew Dober. If we could go into about Drew Dober's fight, pull up the details of Drew Dober's fight for me, Ethan, real quick.
Drew Dober, I gotcha.
It was the last fight on the prelims.
Gotcha.
Drew Dober's been around for a minute doing.
I know he has.
A lot of nothing, but you know, respected fighter somewhat.
Hold up. Sorry about this, guys.
Yeah, not a problem, Ethan. Yeah. Not a problem. But Drew Dober, it all starts with Drew Dober, and we have to go in depth on this. Because Drew Dober is fighting a 3-round fight, and he is in the 3rd round. He is losing, and it's a little tough because I can't remember off the top of my head who he fought.
Oh, he fought. Oh wait, what I'm looking at right now, he did fight at UFC Vancouver. He stood at the Octagon, of course, but I think he fought. Dang, I cannot find this anywhere. I know it was just.
Is it Kyle Pribolek?
It was Kyle Pribolek. Okay. Yeah. So.
Sorry about that.
It's okay. It's okay.
I mean, that's a no-namer.
So, Kyle Pribolek is winning two. He's winning the fight comfortably. Drew Dober gets him with a clear foul shot violation. It's a clear foul shot violation. And we go right into what happens. He takes his 3 minutes or whatever. It's okay. And then the ref, I don't remember who the ref on this one was, but he decides, like, a lot way through, I'm going to take a point away. This was not Dan Mergliotta, because we will get into him later. But he decides, I'm not going to take a point away. And he's like, you know what? I am going to take a point away. 1 point, 1 point, 1 point. And usually that is a move that the referee has to do on the fly, like right as the nut shot happens. But because I guess of the effect of the nut shot, it's whatever, the low blow. It's what happened.
Apparently the referee for this fight was John Cooper.
So Drew Dober then comes out of this break after low blowing his opponent, and he goes ham for around 45 seconds and gets the knockout victory right as they come out of that.
Yeah.
It was one of the craziest things ever. And that was just how we started the night, with bad officiating.
I mean, in an essence, that bad officiating kind of led to the whole bad officiating across the card, as you had said, because I'm looking at a tweet right now from this account called FinChat MMA. This is kind of what they saw, like, in a six pattern step. First, Drew Dober lands the low blow. Then the ref doesn't deduct a point. Proplek looks visibly hurt, and he waited 4 minutes to recover, so Dober basically gets free time to rest. The ref deducts a point from Dober later on. Proplek is negative 800 live, and then shortly after that, as you said, Dober KOs him.
It was ridiculous. And at this point, low blows are legal, and we'll get into that first.
I mean, if you need a break in a fight and you're losing, a low blow is the way to go.
Oh, don't get me started on what I'm about to bring up later. But right now, we have to bring up Big Dan Mergliotta, ladies and gentlemen. He is a very seasoned MMA referee. Has been in the game for years. He's usually one of the ones with not that many mistakes. But, oh my God, was this the worst? This was the worst officiating I've ever seen from one official on a card in my life. Because when we look at the opening of the first fight of the main card, Matt Frivola versus, what was it? Oh my God, I had it written down. But for the Matt Frivola fight, it was against another up-and-coming guy.
Oh, Kyle Nelson. Yeah,
Kyle Nelson. There was two Kyles in these things, which is throwing me off. But in the last 10 seconds of the round, Kyle Nelson drops Matt Frivola. And Matt Frivola goes down into a defensive position. He is in stack guard, full guard, top mount. He is butchering Matt Frivola. And I'm yelling at my TV for Dan Mergliotta to stop this fight. And lo and behold, Dan Mergliotta stops the fight with 3 seconds left. And I said, good job, Dan. You stopped the fight. A little later than I thought, but fine.
I mean, in essence, not to cut you off, but if you're going to stop the fight with 3 seconds left, you might as well just let the other 3 seconds go on.
No. Here's what I'm going to say, because it was a no. I don't agree with that whatsoever.
Okay.
I don't agree with that whatsoever.
I don't either.
Okay.
And you, here's the thing that happened in this fight. So you guys might not have seen it.
Was it the pump fake? Or
Dan was like, I didn't stop the fight.
I didn't stop
the fight. I ended the round. There was 3 seconds left on the clock. You stopped the fight.
Yeah.
And he sends them back out there for rounds two and three.
That has to be one of the most egregious officiating failures in history of UFC.
I mean,
the guy won the fight. The guy was literally like, imagine the elation of winning a UFC fight only to have to get back out there.
Yeah, he had to go back out there, and he drops a round, and he wins another round. Thankfully, he wins a decision, 29-28.
Yeah.
But he should have had a round one TKO at 4 minutes and 57 seconds left. It's 4 minutes and 57 seconds into the first round. Instead, he has a decision win.
Yeah.
If Kyle Nelson had lost at any point in that fight, I am going to the commission and overturning that. That was unnecessary from Big Dan. And I would say it was one of the worst officiating errors and blunders I have ever seen until the co-main event, where Dan Mergliotta pretty much proved to us that low blows are legal.
Low blows are legal in the UFC if you want to get out of a fight, if you want a break in a fight that you are losing.
Did you see this Kevin Holland, Mike Malafa?
Yeah, I did. Yes.
I did. I saw a little bit of it, yes.
This was the most ridiculous thing I have ever seen in my life. Mike Malott low blows Kevin Holland on accident. Okay, fine. Really early into the fight. Kevin Holland is not doing his... Kevin Holland's hurt, and then he's like, okay, I'm going to go back out. Mike Malott gets him into a body lock against the cage and immediately throws another illegal low blow knee.
Yeah.
And Dan Mergliotta does not take a point away.
Legal.
He did it twice in the span of 30 seconds of the fight. Usually you get a warning with one, and as we've seen earlier, if there's one with Drew Dober and it's bad enough, sometimes the ref can take the point away. But no, Kevin Holland takes the full 5 minutes and even longer. It doesn't look like he is about to come back out for the fight until he says, you know what, I will. And then you see him, he's hurt throughout the rest of that fight. And he loses a 29-28 decision. There's another moment in that fight as well where Kevin Holland, in between rounds one and two, is not coming off the stool. He spends another minute down on the stool to try and... reset his groin or whatever to try and feel better.
Usually, medical, you correct with that.
As presidents have seen, only maybe one time, the Yoel Romero Tim Kennedy fight, where that's kind of happened before. But if you can't make it after a minute into the after your minute break into the next round, as we see in the main event, you stop the fight.
Yeah, you can't just...
Kevin Holland, even though I get it, he was egregiously low blow twice. Should have had a point taken away for Mike Malott. But what ends up happening is Kevin Holland gets like an extra minute. The doctors are in the cage. They're saying if he's good to go. Like it's like, oh, he might not be able to be good. All this stuff. Nope. And we just send him out to fight again. Just awful officiating all around.
The precedent that sets is insane, in my opinion. You can, in theory, you know, you have a big cut over your eye. Just try and sit on the stool for an extra minute and bring the doctors out and then go back out. I mean, you could, if you follow this precedent to its logical conclusion, anyone could abuse an injury to stay on the stool for another minute. Anyone. I mean, if someone goes into the, I have a big cut. Maybe you got poked in the eye. And then you sit there and you're like, oh my, you could just abuse the, if they're going to give out extra minutes in between rounds, then it's going to get, that's going to become a veteran move soon. People are going to start using that in championship fights. Maybe you're wobbled at the end of a round and you try and use some sort of excuse for sitting on the stool for an extra minute.
I mean, in an essence, you're absolutely right. That'll probably be utilized as time goes on. But then you also have to understand that, in my opinion, I think UFC does like a pretty good job taking care of like a lot of their fighters. That's also another reason why you've never seen anybody die within the octagon. However, if these type of missed calls keep going unchecked and no one gets points deducted from that, not only could that lead to injury, but it could also lead to like some later stuff down the road that could be tied back to this fight that you had. So essentially, you could take time for sitting in the box or sitting on the stool or whatever to like to repair yourself, because essentially you don't want to like take a hard hit and then your career is over.
I feel like the biggest issue is it's that the commission, because the refereeing and judging is through the commission.
Yeah.
And yeah, we have no accountability through the commission. Like they see no accountability for their errors whatsoever.
See, yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I'm looking at other sports. I mean, the UFC has long been trying to professionalize themselves, along with, you know, that of the NHL and the NBA. I mean, that's why they don't have sponsorships on their shorts anymore, which I totally disagree with, and I think is a horrible. That's a whole nother thing. They should totally have sponsorships on their shorts again. But regardless, NBA has. Like the NBA and the NFL all have like relegations for ref errors, especially the NBA. They have ref reports. They have after games, they have a report on the ref. And if they don't do a good enough job, they get sent down to the G League. This is something that should be implemented.
The one thing I will give credit to, and this is for Dana White, if he's at a card, if there is a referee that is so egregiously bad,
yeah,
they will remove. There's precedent for this one as well. Ethan, if you want to look this up for me, UFC 267. I can't remember who he fought. I can't remember who he fought, but it's the Benoit Saint Denis fight. It was on the early prelims. Benoit Saint Denis's UFC debut, surprisingly at welterweight.
Benoit, let's see.
Wait, are you talking? The ref got relegated immediately.
Elizu. Dos Santos?
Elisa Dos Santos. Oh, yes, that is right. Yes. Oh, my God. So Benoit Saint-Denis is making a short-notice debut at welterweight in Dubai. This was a Dubai ref. This was one of the refs through the Dubai commission. And, man, this was...
I actually remember this.
This is one of the worst beatdowns I've ever seen. And it's surprising that Benoit Saint-Denis is ranked... Like, he's a ranked guy. But it was one of the worst non-stoppages I've ever seen in my life. Joe's not on commentary, but DC is yelling at him to like. DC is yelling. Bisping was probably. Anik was yelling. They were like, "This is egregious," and he was supposed to ref another fight that night. And Dana White said, "We are not. I am not having this guy ref another fight."
I remember that. He was literally slated to ref another fight, and then was cut off immediately.
Dana was like, "Nope, Herb, just go in there and do it."
Yeah, that was a good move.
In essence, with y'all talking about, with what you were saying, Ryan, talking about the comparisons between refs in UFC and NBA, I would say to anybody listening to this podcast, there is a book that everyone should read. It's called Personal Foul, and it's written by this ref. His last name's Donahue, but he reffed the 2006 NBA Finals.
I know about that lore.
Yeah, and they literally, he literally openly admits in the book, like, yeah, we bet on games and we fix games. So if you really want to understand how some referees work, everyone should pick up that book.
That is an interesting book on referees.
I will say this, though. At a certain point, you're, as an NFL and an NBA ref, you have responsibilities. As an MMA referee,
you have even more responsibilities.
You have to be on top. If you're not doing your job, somebody is going to die.
Yeah.
If you are not on top of your job like that, you are going to die, and somebody could get killed.
But I mean, looking at the UFC rules, I mean, you're completely right. It seems like they're so, like, bendable to the point where you, like, you don't really even know what's acceptable and what's not, with the whole doctor thing, with the staying on the stool and the extra, or the fact that taking away a point isn't really, like, is kind of up to the ref's judgment, is, like, a subject of great debate, even in boxing. I mean, like whether you should take a point or not, maybe they should try and implement a system where it's kind of automatic, where it's like, all right.
I feel like if it's one low, if it's one, because usually the groin shots are accidental.
Yeah.
I say one is fine. Like, if one happens, it happens. If two happens, then that's when you take a point away. And if two happens within the span of literal seconds of each other, you take a point away.
Yeah, for sure. That's just recklessness. And that's why you take the point. You're supposed to hold the two people accountable to following the rules. Because, again, in MMA, like you said, the responsibility that comes with following the rules in MMA is to the health of both of the fighters. So obviously in basketball, you commit a foul, whatever. MMA, you are kicking them full speed professionally in their groin.
Woo!
And, like, that is a serious health concern. You cannot let these things, like, go under the radar in any sort of way.
You really can't. It's getting egregious. And there is no quick solution to this. This is only going to come over time. These refs really affected my Saturday in a negative way. Especially because if we had a point taken away, Kevin Holland would have had a draw instead of a loss. But I kind of want to go into the rest of this card real quick. So the fight of the night was Dober versus Kyle Prepolic. Well-deserved, even with the controversy. Performance bonuses, Charles Jourdain versus Davy Grant. That was one of the coolest sequences ever. Charles Jourdain making his bantamweight presence known.
I like Charles Jourdain.
Especially after going back down from featherweight. He hits Davy Grant with a flying knee and finishes him with a guillotine on top mount. That was just a beautiful sequence all around. We also have Miona Ferrart knocked out Jasmine Jasveridian in one round. That was a really, like, that was to prove that, like, her loss to Valentina was because, hey, I almost got Valentina.
Yeah, I mean,
these other girls can't mess with me.
Losses to Valentina are commonplace.
Exactly.
Hmm.
And Chito Vera versus Aman Zahabi, guys. Please, somebody else start this one.
Well, Chito Vera, wait, hold on. Let's get up on the mic.
I
heard.
Chito Vera has long been one of my favorite fighters. And, like, I mean, listen, he's kind of an unk, objectively.
Yeah, compared to the guy, he is kind of an unk objectively, but he's still 5 years, he's almost 6 years younger than the guy he's fighting.
That's true. I mean, I'm not going to make any excuses for my guy here. My guy is on the washed cycle right now.
Dude, it's not even the wash cycle. He has always fought like this, and it makes no sense. He likes being a human punching bag for, like, a round or two. If you look at round two of that fight, where Chito knocks Zahabi down, you can't tell, like, and then Chito comes out and loses via split decision. At this point, it's not that he's washed. It's not that his ability has taken a downturn. He just comes out and thinks he's winning.
I think he's been figured out, maybe.
Like, I don't think he's too slow to start off fights. He picks up too late.
Yeah.
Because I guarantee you, if that's a 5-round main event, that is Chito Vera all day.
Yeah, probably.
If the Chito Vera wins rounds 4 and 5, and he's one of those guys that gets better as the fight goes on, but he doesn't do enough earlier in the fight.
In essence, you could kind of place that, like, with you not doing enough in the fight, you kind of fall behind very early. And if you fall behind early, that's a hole that you're digging yourself into that you probably won't be able to dig yourself out of. Ryan, like you were saying, I think he probably has been like found out, and it may contribute to like whatever downsides that come after.
I mean, I feel like you said, this is how he's always fought. So like falling behind isn't even like an option in a 3-round fight. I mean, like, well, round one is like as important.
There's
as
There's one
three.
Guy that does it better than anybody also at that division. There's one guy who does not mind being a human punching bag for one round. But as soon as rounds two and three come on, and I'm talking about Piotr Jan right
here.
Yeah,
I know you're talking about Piotr Jan.
Piotr Jan will turn it up to a different level at round two.
He's just better.
Cheeto, like, no, Cheeto will go into round one and do nothing, and it's expected. I'm not expecting Cheeto Vera to ever win a round one. I'm expecting him to win a round two, which he did. I'll say that he did. He had a clear knock on Zahabi. It was perfect. But then he acts like he has more time than he does.
Yeah.
If you're fighting... And this is the perfect example. When he fought Rob Font back in 2022, Ethan, I want you to pull this up, actually. Sure. I want you to pull up the striking differential between Rob Font and Cheeto Vera.
Striking differential.
The significant strikes. Look up the stats for that one. I want the strike differential because it's actually crazy.
All right, I gotcha. Let's see.
I mean, there is something to Cheeto Vera where... Maybe, like, in the prime of his come-up, he was kind of, like, scary. These days, I don't know if fighters even care about Cheeto Vera.
He's still 32.
Yeah,
we have guys like Zahabi that are trying to make their first ever bantamweight title run at 38.
That's true, but, I mean, people just aren't scared of him anymore.
If you don't mind saying, do you remember exactly what card it was?
Rob Font versus, it was an Apex card. It was Rob Font versus Cheeto Vera.
Okay, gotcha.
That's all it is.
Gotcha.
Rob Font versus Cheeto Vera. It was, like, May of 2022.
Gotcha.
I mean, Rob Font, by the way, is one of my favorite fighters.
We'll get into, actually, you know what, though? We'll get into Rob Font a little later because he is on my list of fights to make after UFC Vancouver.
I'm always down to get into Rob Font.
We'll get into Rob Font in a second, actually. I just need to go into detail on Cheeto Vera's style right now.
All right, I think I have the total strike differential.
Okay, I got it.
You guys see that total strike? Give me the numbers for Rob Font and to give you the number for Cheeto Vera.
You got it.
167 for Cheeto Vera, 273 for Rob Font.
273 for Rob Font, 167 for Cheeto Vera. Okay. Off the top of your head, who do you think wins that fight? Who do you think's winning that fight?
I mean, clearly it must have been Rob Font.
Rob Font, right?
In the actual fight itself. Cheeto Vera destroyed him.
No, yeah, I mean, I knew this.
This was a total beatdown. Cheeto Vera did not get started till round three.
Yeah, I mean, that's how he operates.
He literally sat down and did nothing till round three, and when round three came along, he put down the beatdown of the century on Rob Font. If you look at the two faces, you would think that Rob Font was the one that got 267 strikes landed on, while Cheeto Vera...
We're running down the stats right now. The total strikes 273 to 167. Total headshots, Rob Font had 199 to Cheeto Vera's 95. Body shots, 48 to 22. Vera actually legging leg shots at 42 to 24, and he had more control. So maybe that more control thing probably came within the third round.
No, the control wasn't as much to do with it as possible as it may have been Rob Font panic wrestling.
Uh-huh.
That fight really had nothing to do with control and just, oh my God, Cheeto Vera is so powerful. He has a chin of steel. He will punch you back harder than you will hit him. And, man, I got to get better at making graphics. And this is this was an impromptu segment.
I mean, he hits harder.
But if you look at Rob Font's face after that fight, you just think, that's the guy that got hit with 200 strikes.
Yeah.
That's the guy that got hit 200 times, not the other way around. So Cheeto Vera's style, because outside of the one O'Malley and Figueroa, like you don't see him get definitively beaten.
Never. O'Malley though, he did.
O'Malley did. Figgy did too, and so did Sanhagen. But like, okay. You don't see him get like.
Well, I mean, even those three fighters, Sahabi's not as good as those three guys. Those three guys are like championship fighters.
Sahabi is calling out Sean O'Malley right now.
He's done.
I am saying, you hold yourself, buddy. And then We've already got into Kevin Holland, Mike Malott, so we're just going to go.
We can move forward.
We're going to go to Renier DeRitter and Brendan Allen.
Brendan Allen. This is the one I want to talk about, too.
Kick us off.
Okay, you got it.
Okay, so I will say this was like the main fight that I watched throughout the entire UFC Vancouver card. This was kind of the one I was...
big main event.
Yeah, it was the big main event. In fact, I think the last odds thing I saw, don't quote me on the numbers, but I think Ritter was actually favored to beat Allen by
big
time. Like,
it was a big odds.
Yeah, I think it was like -200, something like that.
I think it could have been closer to the fours.
Maybe. I'll look it up.
Yeah, Brendan Allen is a short-term replacement. He's coming in on short notice against Fluffy Hernandez, Anthony Hernandez. Brendan Allen has already lost to Anthony Hernandez. He's lost to Nazardeen. And he's coming in now to fight a guy like Renier DeRitter, who's coming off of a win against Robert Whittaker, Kevin Holland, Bo Nickel. wow. How did Renier DeRitter beat Kevin or Robert Whittaker? That's all I'm going to say. Sorry.
I mean, but when's the last time we saw Robert Whittaker? Was it in that fight?
Win a fight?
Yeah.
We saw him. The last time we saw him was the fight with Renier DeRitter. Yeah. That was only a couple months ago. It wasn't that, that was like July. It's a little closer than you would think.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to call it short, but I mean, maybe Robert Whittaker's could be on the downturn.
I could also say that RDR could be that he's fighting too much this year.
Maybe.
This is fight number, and if you actually please go back to last year too, when he made his debut against GM3. If you're looking for Renier DeRitter's record for me, when did his fight against GM3 happen?
Not to cut you guys off, but I just found out the odds for that fight between Renier DeRitter and Brendan Allen. Renier DeRitter was favored by like -200.
Wow, okay.
-200, and Brendan Allen was +164.
Okay. So Vegas, so they were saying that Brendan Allen, I agreed with those odds going in, and then even if you watched the first round of that, you would think Renier DeRitter, like, yeah, he looks like the guy we thought he was. He's grappling Brendan Allen, but he gassed out.
Yeah, I mean, this is his fourth fight of the year.
And when did he fight?
And it's only October 18th, too. Like, it's not like it's his fourth fight of the year, and it's, like, December 30th.
When did he fight GM3? Gerald Merchart.
November 9th, 2024.
So that's his fifth fight in a 365-day period.
Yeah, so within a year period, this is his fifth fight. Yeah.
He's fought five times, so I can understand where the gassness is coming from.
But I mean, like, let's get real here. Like, what are you gassed from? Are you gassed from a fight that happened like 3 months ago, or like, I don't know? Is there damage to your body that you're trying to like mask?
Maybe he's doing too much too soon. But maybe it could be a weight cut. It could be all these things.
Yeah, I mean, just to state the obvious, if anyone is listening and they don't know, he sat on the stool. Like, you know, we gotta talk like the actual result. He didn't come out off of his stool.
Yep, Renier DeRitter did not come out for round five. Daniel Cormier was saying he was on the ground. Daniel Cormier or Bisping, I forgot which one it was. Or wait, was Bisping not on the card or Felter? Someone of the commentators. He's not. His coaches were trying to get him up off the ground. Like the ref was like, nope, you can't get him off the ground. He has to get up by himself. And he goes on the stool and he's like, I'm done. I can't do it.
He gassed out essentially. Which, I mean, what is the explanation for that?
Brendan Allen is just that good of a wrestler. He has lost to some very good people, and Brendan Allen is on the top of is moving up in the middleweight division, even though he's lost to two of the top guys already.
And also, I mean, of the last five fights, only one of them was a five-round fight, and it was against Robert Whittaker. The rest of them went two rounds. Kevin Holland was a one-round fight, and the Gerald Meerschaert was a three-round fight. So he got to round four, but admittedly, this is probably a more physically taxing four-round fight than, like, Robert Whittaker's five-round fight because of the wrestling aspect of it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's clearly – I mean, you could say he's not used to it. He just isn't – he hasn't tested his body to the point of a five-round wrestling match.
All right. So now we're at the point is – I have a list of fights I want to see after this Vancouver card. Dana White says he doesn't like to make fights the night of the fight, and I understand that. I like to give it a couple days, and then I like to make fights, and I just like to look at who's available for everybody that's like on that card. And most of these fights probably won't get made, but if we're going to start off first, we got to start off with the winner from the main event, Brendan Allen. And I want to see him fight Dricus du Plessis.
I agree. I mean, I think
if Nazardeen,
that's kind of a jump there.
It is a kind of, well, Renier de Ritter was ranked number 4.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. Renier de Ritter, if he won, people would say, all right, go fight Dricus du Plessis, no problem.
Maybe Caio Barjalio.
That'd be
as well,
like, that'd
but
just be fun.
That's a little bit fighting down too.
Yeah.
Dricus is in need of a fight. Dricus, if you're gonna give Nazardeen the next title shot right off the bat, it's got to be him. You could maybe do Strickland, but I don't see Strickland fighting a guy like Brendan Allen. I feel like Dricus, that's the perfect title eliminator fight for Allen if he's already lost to Fluffy and he's already lost to Nazardeen. And if Nazardeen will get the next shot and Fluffy is in the waiting as well, I say you give him, let's do Brendan Allen and Dricus du Plessis.
I think that fight would also serve as a good fight for Dricus du Plessis because I think he probably wins.
And then that's
a
good
probably
comeback.
Reminds the people, hey, you know,
I'm back.
I'm still here, you know. I didn't. So I think that'd be good for like the UFC fans to see him be back.
Well, who do y'all think would win if that fight ever came up?
Give me Dricus du Plessis.
Yeah,
I'd say that.
Dricus du Plessis by via wooden mallet and hammer.
Yeah. Just too much. I mean, that's a cardio guy too.
Yeah. Something different about Dricus du Plessis. You don't know what it is, but that man is just so unique. His style doesn't make any sense. His fighting doesn't make any sense. He still somehow almost submitted Hamza with 10 seconds left, even after like being losing the entire fight. There's just something about him, and I feel like he gets that done. And the next fight we're going to do is, this one pains me for Renier de Ritter, but Renier de Ritter is in a lucky spot in the middleweight division right now, as he is a star from another organization that the UFC has tried building up a lot, and he's just been really, really active.
Mm-hmm.
Renier de Ritter's best advantage is that he is currently in the UFC middleweight division at a shifting point in its history.
Yeah.
So, realistically, Renier de Ritter coming off a loss, there's one prospect, or I wouldn't say he's not a prospect, but there's one fighter ranked at middleweight that's on a 3-fight losing skid right now. And we could potentially get Renier de Ritter versus Israel Adesanya. And that's what I'm thinking the UFC goes in the direction with. Because either or, you build Renier de Ritter back up as a star, or Israel Adesanya gets the win.
The Israel Adesanya comeback narrative would feed generations.
That's feeding families right there.
That is feeding families.
I think that's the fight. It is a weird matchup for Adesanya. I do think Renier de Ritter gets it done with his wrestling skills. But again, we could see him gas out, and that kickboxing could be way too much. We could see an Adesanya early knockout, and that's kind of what I'm hoping for. I like nostalgia runs in our sport. I need another Adesanya run, even though he's been, whatever the last few years have been, it's not been fun to watch as an Adesanya fan.
I could agree with this take with very little
opposition.
Opposition, yeah. I think we all want to see that. Also, I don't really care about Renier de Ritter, so if he lost,
Adesanya's got another win.
We're all here for the Adesanya comeback. I mean, I don't even love Israel Adesanya. He was never like one of my favorites.
Man, hey, watching
but I got nostalgia for him, just like everyone else.
Watching
does.
Him fight like back in the day was special.
It
like
was.
There was
until
some,
it wasn't.
There were some things like I remember literally skipping. Like, leaving this one party because I was like, I have to go watch Israel Adesanya fight. I'm not staying.
Do you know which one it was?
Marvin Vettori.
Yeah, he won. Until he lost to Sean Strickland, that was like...
That was the most shocking.
Well, Sean Strickland was like a plus 600.
That was one of the most shocking upsets I've ever seen.
Yeah, and it was all on the feet, which, like, complete domination. I mean, this is...
That was one of the most impressive performances, but I can't get it too into that right now as much as I want to. I have a few more fights I want, and then we also have a UFC 321 recap.
Yeah.
Or preview. Mike Malott beat Kevin Holland this weekend via questionable calls. Should have been a draw.
yes.
But if Mike Malott wants to work his way back into the welterweight rankings, there is a guy on his way down that said he wants two more fights and then to retire. why not do Mike Malott versus Gilbert Burns? We get Canada versus Brazil. Let's have it happen. Let's have some fun with that one. Let's give Gilbert maybe a potential win on his way out because he said he only wants to do two more. But if you want to give a guy like Mike Malott a place to shine, let's do Mike Malott and Gilbert Burns.
I feel like for a guy like Gilbert Burns with two fights left, I feel like you got to give him some classics instead of maybe like a young, like a little Mike Malott.
Well, Mike Malott's not that young.
Yeah, but like he's not young, but he's not like a class. He's like maybe you got. I mean, I guess Gilbert Burns isn't necessarily like a UFC legend. So
I guess
you could justify giving him Mike Malott in his final two fights.
If we want to give him, here's the thing. I say we do the Mike Malott fight, and if he wins, we could give him Colby Covington for a retire because that was one of the fights we did not get during the initial.
That fight should just totally happen.
That's the one welterweight fight from that era we didn't get to see. We didn't get to see Gilbert versus Colby. We got to see Gilbert versus Usman. We got to see Gilbert versus Wonderboy. We got to see Gilbert versus Masvidal. We've gotten to see Gilbert versus Neil Magny. We've gotten to see Gilbert versus Tyron. We've seen Gilbert against everybody. He's lost his last four now. But if you look at the murderer's row he has fought, it is Bilal Muhammad, Jack Della Maddalena, Sean Brady, and Michael Morales.
His last win is April 8th of 2023.
Against Jorge Masvidal. So that's my point exactly. Like, let's give him Mike Malott, and then maybe Cole be on his way out.
I could get down with that.
Same. I'm looking at Gilbert Burns' last fight against Michael Morales.
Yeah.
This was ugly.
It was quick, and that's what happens when you get a stone cold knockout finisher that's on his way up against a guy that knows he's on his way down. But that just tends to be what happens.
I feel like Colby Covington too is one of the only ways you could get Gilbert Burns intrinsically motivated for a fight because that's like a guy he knows. It's a guy from his era. He wants to beat Colby Covington. Like, that's going to get him going.
But will Colby take the fight? That's the real question.
He got to. That's another one Colby, I feel like, would like to get into either, if he even still cares about fighting.
I think he would. Right. Considering the fact he fought Joaquin Buckley last year, I feel like he would. We're going to move on to Kevin Holland. I want him to fight Joel Alvarez next. My reasoning is they both beat Luque. And in Luque's last two, Kevin Holland did it in more impressive fashion. Let's just see Kevin.
Tournament.
You know, it is a Vicente Luque tournament, but this is a welterweight fight. Kevin Holland, for all we know, could say screw it. I want to go up to middleweight right now.
Fight anyone. There could be a fight in the next UFC event that Kevin Holland might be on the next UFC card if someone drops out.
Ayman Zahabi, he says he wants Sean O'Malley at the White House after wins against Jose Aldo and Chito Vera. We're not doing Sean O'Malley at the White House. Let's do Ayman Zahabi, and if he wants to fight up, he could do Song Yadong.
Yeah, I mean, that could be a Sean O'Malley tournament.
That could be a Sean
O'Malley. The winner gets to Sean O'Malley.
I don't care what anybody says. My dream fight for the last 4 years now has been Sean O'Malley versus Corey Sandhagen. If we can get that fight to happen by any means necessary.
I feel like that's not bad on the White House.
That
would feed families.
All-American.
That is the greatest fight I've...
An All-American White House matchup.
It's ridiculous.
The fact that the White House thing is even happening is absurd. Because I think it's actually going to happen, probably.
No, it is happening.
It's happening. It's on, like, Donkey Kong.
Yeah, it is on.
It is on. June 14th, I think it is. Whatever Prez's birthday is. That's
June 14th, yeah.
That's the day. I'm so excited for that UFC White House card.
It's probably going to be the... I would imagine it's the most stacked UFC card of all time.
I don't know if anything is ever beating 300.
I think he's going to try and beat it just because it's almost more significant than UFC 300.
Here's the thing. You'll never... and this is... we're going off topic again here. Let's keep it rolling today. If you guys look up the UFC 205 card right now and you go from the early prelims of that, the first ever MSG card... From the prelims?
Is that McGregor versus Alvarez?
Yep.
Yeah.
To the main event. That is the most stacked card you'll ever see in your life. And I don't think anything will ever top that card.
Was it stacked at the time, or was it kind of retrospectively?
It was stacked at the time, but retrospectively, no card will ever be this stacked. Look at the early prelims.
Yeah, but I could just imagine this UFC White House being like O'Malley,
Khabib was,
McGregor.
All I'm going to say is Khabib was supposed to get this fight, the title fight at UFC 205, until Conor said he wanted to move up to lightweight, and that's why Khabib is on the prelims.
So who do we think is the main? Who's main eventing? I think it's McGregor. No, is he going
to
main event?
I don't want to think about the White House because we have
we got a year.
So we've got a year. We have a little less than a year.
Yeah,
but we will not start to find out details till May.
I mean, the way they've been talking, McGregor seems like he's in it.
I'm gonna move on to Chito Vera versus Marcus McGee. Marcus McGee is a 35-year-old prospect. He's the number 15 ranked bantamweight in the world. He just fought Piotr Jan in a semi-competitive fight, but Piotr Jan won. I feel like if we want anybody to get Chito Vera his edge back, let's give him Marcus McGee. And if he loses, oh, you just lost to another ranked guy that's older than you. You'll just go down a bit, and hopefully you have a career resurgence at 35, like everybody else here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You might switch places in 3 years when you beat
exactly.
Yeah.
I want Miona Ferrant versus Natalia Silva because we have Zhang Weili and Valentina Shevchenko coming up. And that's your number one. Natalia Silva just beat Grasso. Fiore is coming off the loss to Valentina and wins over the entire division. So I say let's do that. We're going to do Jazz Meridian versus Rose Namajunas. Let's give Rose Namajunas a win to come back to.
I wish.
And we're going to do Charles Jourdain versus, this is what I said, Charles Jourdain, newly bantamweight, versus your guy, Ryan.
Rob Font.
I feel like that's the fight. I feel like after a performance like that, you got to get a top 15 right after. Rob Font's on his,
his way out.
He's 13. 5 years ago, he was ranked number 3.
I mean, a couple of years ago, you were looking at Rob Font like he was like one of the best fighters. Like
I was looking at Chito Vera like he was one of the best fighters at the same time.
Yeah, I guess. Is it going to get to that conversation where Chito Vera was never that good? Or, like, are we going to start saying that? We can maybe.
Can I say something?
Yeah.
We're 100%. There's going to be – I will never agree with it because I think he is that good. I feel like he just has terrible game planning. But we are going to have that conversation because if you watch Chito Vera – oh, my – and it's so funny, too. There's this one featherweight fight he had 5 years ago during the pandemic. That was exactly like the Zahabi fight.
Who was he fighting?
Yeah.
So funny now because it was a feather. It was Song Yadong.
Oh.
So it was a new coming Song Yadong. It was before Chito had just fought O'Malley, and he loses via the split decision like that. And it's because Cheeto's output is terrible, and he's not doing enough. But he's also not like getting hurt enough either. He's not getting hurt enough either to the point where he could still say, "What is going on? I won the fight."
Yeah, I mean, I think he's about to get the "you were never that good" allegations in the inevitable. And I'm not going to completely say they're wrong. He did walk in. I mean, what he ran, he was probably when he fought Sean O'Malley, it was largely a huge argument that it was not deserved. And it was partially made because the narrative was, well, because he lost to, because Sean O'Malley lost to him because he broke his leg.
No, it was made because of that.
Yeah.
It was made because of that fight because, one, he had lost to Corey Sandhagen the year before, and then he had beaten Pedro Munhoz. And everybody was saying, you are not getting a title shot off of Pedro Munhoz. We have a guy in Merab that's on a 12-fight win streak right now. Why are you getting the title shot?
Yeah, I mean, he was ranked 7. I remember. It's very rare you look at a UFC championship fight. You look at the two cards, the two names. You see O'Malley, C, Vera, 7. Like, the 7th-ranked fighter is not typically... It was for narrative purposes, and he was not really competitive in that fight. It was kind of an O'Malley show-off fight. So, like, was he really ever a championship-level fighter? No. It really shouldn't even come to a surprise that he's not really – he's losing relatively – his name precedes his actual ability, probably.
Yeah, no, it definitely does.
That's a fair assessment.
That's all the time we're going to give to UFC Vancouver. Again, as I said, one of the most infuriating cards we've ever seen in our lives. And we got to move on. We got a big pay-per-view this weekend. We have UFC 321.
Yeah, buddy.
And we got the
sound. He's like a soundboard.
We got the UFC heavyweight title. We have Tom Aspinall versus Ciryl Gane. And there's one thing I want to say about this fight right now, guys. Do you guys remember the old song, the duck song?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Bop, 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 da ba da. The duck walked up to the lemonade stand, and he said to the man running the stand, hey, bop, 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 got any grapes?
Yes, I remember the song.
And the man says, no, we have lemonade. And he waddled away, waddled, waddle. And he waddled away, waddle, waddle. Till the very next day, bum, bum, bum. All right, bum,
where are we
bum,
going
bum.
With this?
Okay.
Yeah, where are we going
so
with this?
So you know how after three times, eventually, he's like, you know what? I do want lemonade. John Jones is the duck. The lemonade stand guy is Dana White. The lemonade is John Jones. And the grapes are Ciryl Gane and Stipe Miocic.
You're set. Okay, so now break it down.
Break it down. Yeah, break it down.
John Jones. This fight is the most detrimental fight to John Jones' legacy I have ever seen in my life. And it's crazy to think about that because he has nothing to do with this fight. But this fight somehow has John Jones' legacy written all over it.
It should have been John Jones in the spot of Ciryl Gane.
Yeah.
We could talk about that for days. John Jones decided to duck, as some people say, Tom Aspinall. He did not want the fight. He chose to fight Stipe. He chose to wait out a year and fight, or he got hurt. Chose to fight Stipe instead and retired.
He did retire until he found out that Donald Trump would be holding an event at the UFC at the White House.
He did decide to retire until he found out that Donald Trump would be holding a UFC event. Because
he loves Donald Trump.
But
don't a lot of UFCers.
All right. So he did this. So that's the thing. John Jones is like, I'll take Gane. I'll take Stipe. What about Aspinall, though? Dana's like, do you want lemonade, though? Like, this is a lemonade stand. You got to fight the interim champion. And Tom Aspinall goes, oh, sure. Please fight me. Please fight me. Please fight me. And John's like, nah, I'm good. So we have Tom Aspinall versus Ciryl Gane for the Undisputed Heavyweight Championship.
Tom Aspinall's going to crack him.
Here's the thing. Tom Aspinall won the interim title as of today, 710 days ago. He defended the interim title 451 days ago. It's been 451 days since we've seen Tom
Even
Aspinall
the concept fight. Of defending the interim title is stupid.
Exactly. So now that he's actually the undisputed champion, he has a chance to fight Ciryl Gane. And if he beats Ciryl Gane, that is who John Jones won his heavyweight championship from.
Yes.
Speaking of this fight, I have the odds pulled up right in front of me from Odd Shark. Before I say these odds, just take a guess. What do you think they are?
I think Tom Aspinall is a minus 250 favorite.
I'm gonna say 325.
Minus 460.
Oh my God.
Wow. I feel like honestly, it's the heavyweight division. I feel like we should not. I feel like a lot of the times in the sport, we shouldn't be listening to Vegas. Tom Aspinall is crazy good. He is an insanely powerful puncher. If you watch that fight between him and Sergey Pavlovich, where he wins the interim title, it looks like whichever man is going to hit first is gonna win, and Tom Aspinall hit first.
Yeah, but the fact that Tom Aspinall is so quick, like Pavlovich, listen. He's kind of a – I would hope that we're in a new UFC era where we see more Tom Aspinalls who actually look like professional athletes, because a lot of these guys, such as Sergey Pavlovich, are big dudes who throw hands, and, like, it's kind of awesome.
So another thing with this is because, well, remember, Gane has been in the title picture now since he won the interim title. It's been 4 years.
Yeah, anyway, I mean, he got finished by, like, an old John Jones in, like, 2 minutes.
Grappling wise, but here's the thing: he's a long, lengthy, rangy striker. Do you see how I could see how Gane can, if Gane survives one round, I could see him winning the fight.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I could see. I think minus four. I mean,
when you have a guy who has an average fight time of 55 seconds,
I don't see it going that way with Ciryl Gane. He's a striker. Like, Ciryl Gane is not getting knocked out in 55 seconds.
Vegas disagrees with you.
Yeah, they disagree with me.
I can't see Ciryl Gane getting knocked out in 55 seconds, but then I also see Tom Aspinall could have a better potential wrestling game. But if Ciryl Gane wins.
These guys aren't really going to wrestle, though, I think.
Let's be real, they're not.
Yeah, they're not wrestling.
If Ciryl Gane wins this fight, and if he beats Tom Aspinall, I am going to log on to Twitter, and I am going to watch John Jones have a field day.
John Jones is praying
John Jones is
on
not,
the downfall.
No, John Jones is not coming out of retirement for anything if Ciryl Gane wins this fight. Because John Jones is going to be on Twitter.
The victory lap of John Jones.
Taking a victory lap. Victory lap after victory lap after victory lap. Because John Jones is going to be like, oh, Aspinall could have beat Gane, and I could beat Gane, and
weirdly, like, he wouldn't be wrong.
He would not be wrong. But the thing is with this fight, nobody wants John Jones to be right. And here's the thing that scares me about the odds and, like, what we've seen from what I've seen in the past. Guys, I hate to say it. John Jones tends to be right about this type of stuff.
Does he?
Yes.
Does he?
Yes, he does. Dominic Reyes, Jan Blachowicz.
Yeah, I mean, he was talking like,
I mean, yeah.
Dominic Reyes, Jan Blachowicz. After we all say Dominic Reyes beat John Jones, he did beat him. We'll go into that one later. But Dominic Reyes proceeds to then lose his fight to Jan Blachowicz. And then Jan Blachowicz starts talking about John Jones, left light heavyweight division, didn't want to fight me. I just beat Adesanya when you weren't going to face Adesanya. And John is like, you're a good champ, but you're talking way too much, bud. And then Jan Blachowicz proceeds to get dominated by somebody John Jones had previously beaten.
Yeah, it's John Jones does. I mean, listen, he's been around like so long that he's probably seen this unfold.
He
many
tends
times.
To be right. He like when we say John Jones is like ducking somebody, which granted in this case it could it, like we've seen the situation play out. John Jones does tend to be right, however, in the fact that the guy that's calling him out and says that John is ducking him tends to lose to the guy that John Jones beat, and it's just this weird coincidence that tends to happen. Another example of this, this has nothing to do with, I know this one, it doesn't have to do with, he was ducking him or whatever, but when Khabib Nurmagomedov retired and Charles Oliveira became the light heavyweight champion of the world, I listened to conversations for a year and a half about the hypothetical what if matchup between Khabib Nurmagomedov and Charles Oliveira.
Yeah.
Like, what if we got that? What if we got that for 30 and 0? Like all we need is that. All we need is that. And then Islam comes in and dominates Charles Oliveira, wins the lightweight championship of the world.
Well, I actually feel like Islam Makhachev is better than Khabib. So I could kind of stand by that. I wish they got that Oliveira Khabib.
He's a better striker than Khabib.
Which is important, in my opinion. It's extremely important. I think Khabib, that's what got him a win over Oliveira, was his striking. If it was a wrestling match, Islam Makhachev probably still wins. But, I mean, bro, and Oliveira would be I think Oliveira would go into the fight with Khabib as a better striker and a not as good wrestler, but probably a closer ground game than the striking differential. But Khabib probably wins.
I think Khabib wins that fight
any
day of the week. So, I want to move on to the rest of the card real quick. We got into that one. We're going to do a quick preview of the main card. There's a lot of guys on the prelims I like. Oh, we have Chris Barnett, Walter Walker, Ikram Alaskarov, Nasrat Habisha. I always forget
Chris Barnett.
Chris Barnett. He's back.
Chris Barnett reference 2025.
Chris Barnett is fighting for the first time in a year. So we have a nice, fun little undercard. We're going to our main card starts with Alexander Rakic versus Azmat. I can't remember how to pronounce his last name. I definitely do need the laptop open next time. Because sometimes the last name...
Azmat Mirzakhanov?
Mirzakhanov. He's been on a run. He's 15-0.
He is
15-0. He's undefeated, and now he's looking to potentially break into that top 5 or 6 with a win over Rakic, is what I'm excited about. We have the potential title eliminator fight at Bantamweight between Umar Nurmagomedov and Mario Bautista. If Mario Bautista wins this fight, how is he not next in line for the title fight if Piotr Jan loses to Marab?
I feel like Umar Nurmagomedov, the rest of this division is suffering because of Marab's dominance. It seems like nobody is ever going to beat Marab. I feel like...
I don't mind, though. So here's the thing. Over the last like 2 or 3 years, undoubtedly Bantamweight has been the most stacked division in the UFC.
True.
And I think the fact that now we have a champion that is dominating the division has beaten everybody in the division and will continue to beat everybody in the division in arguably the most stacked division in the UFC.
It's pretty crazy.
Makes you say, like, hey, like, I'm the man. I should be the pound for pound. I'm the best in the world.
Let's talk about Volkov. Volkov and Jaleson Almeida. Volkov, this is why I want to talk about Volkov, because he's one of my personal favorite fighters. And I just don't – he got screwed in his last fight.
He won. He should be in this matchup against Aspinall right now.
And listen, he probably loses, bro.
He already has lost.
We get it.
He already has lost.
Yeah, I do know. I have seen.
He also has lost to Gon twice.
But he's kind of on a new. He's kind of on his new arc a little bit right now. Like, he's not like the old Volkov.
Did Volkov lose to Gon and Aspinall back to back, or did he get a win in between them? Like, I'm talking about.
That's a good question.
I'm talking about 2021, 2022.
Let's take a peek at Volkov.
Not when they fought last.
He lost to Ciryl Gon last. Blah blah blah. He beat Sergey Pavlovich.
I remember that.
He beat Tai Tuivasa. He beat Alexander Romanov. This is his little run. He beat Alexander Romanov.
But in June of 2021, he lost to Gon.
In June of 2021,
he lost to Gon.
He lost to Ciryl Gon after he beat Marcin Tybura.
And then did he went. Was
and then
Aspinall?
He beat Alexander. Yeah, he. Wait. No. He beat Overeem, lost to Gon, beat Tybura. And then there, I think there is fights in between because then he beats Rosenstrike.
And then he lost to Aspinall.
Yeah.
Okay, so he did have a couple fights in between.
But bro, he's been on his comeback arc here right now.
Yeah, no.
And if he has that win over Ciryl Gon as his last fight, his comeback arc is like
he's getting this title shot.
Yeah,
tonight.
He's like well in this comeback arc. Like and he, when in this fight too, you're starting to think like, all right. I mean, Volkov is he's winning fights. Like you got a shot here. No.
Yeah. No. 100%.
However, going into that fight, Volkov's actually the underdog according to Vegas.
Ah. Vegas. What do they know?
Man. And then, so we have Volkov and Maeda, and then finally we have the Zhang Wei Li has now vacated her strawweight championship
for Mackenzie Dern to lock in.
Mackenzie Dern and Verona. The second time they fought, by the way, they fought at UFC 2.
Verna Jandaroba.
She's very interesting because she has. I remember watching this fight 5 years ago. It was UFC 256. They last fought. It was on the main card too. It's one of the greatest main cards of all time, by the way, during the pandemic era.
Was 256.
Davison Figueiredo versus Brandon Moreno won the first fight. The draw, Tony versus Charles. This fight, the Kevin Holland Jacare. Kevin Holland going boom to Jacare off his back. And Junior Dos Santos versus Jarninho.
Who do you think got
this? Oh, Junior Dos Santos versus Ciryl Gon, actually.
Yeah. I used to like Ciryl Gon back then. Who do you think got this one? What are the
I feel like Mackenzie Dern is in this fight because she is a star. She's on a 2-fight win streak right now. Verena's been going off the last few years. Mackenzie won the first fight. She has elite jiu-jitsu. But for Anu, give me Virginia Jabberizi. I've been watching her for so many years that I can't pronounce it.
Jandaroba. No, you weren't that close.
give me Verena Jandaroba to win via probably decision.
I agree. I think Mackenzie Dern's in here because of external factors.
Mackenzie Dern is a star, if I've ever seen one. Like, the UFC pushes her as a star, and she is a star. And this was the best opportunity with them not doing double champs anymore. This is the best opportunity for her to get a title shot now that Wei Li is gone. But if Dern wins, do we really... Like, she's lost it almost the entirety of the top five already. I can't see it.
Yeah, I agree.
And then final predictions for I'm gonna give Alexander Volkov the run against Jaleson Almeida. Jaleson likes to take you down, but then when Jaleson gets stuffed on a takedown, he kind of gives up, and then he's not that good of a striker.
I feel like I agree. I'm gonna take Volkov not only because he's one of my favorite fighters, but it's because he's an elite fighter in 2025. He's gone on his comeback arc. He beat Ciryl Gon, and you know, he's an elite fighter. He's kind of proven himself to be in that upper echelon of heavyweight fighters.
I'm going to say give me Mario Bautista and give me Rakic. I feel like Rakic begins his comeback arc.
No, I don't. I think this is... I don't know if I believe in the Rakic comeback arc.
Give me Mario Bautista and give me Volkov. And then also for the Jandaroba Dern battle. Jandaroba's favored. -160
I'm gonna
from
do that.
Vegas.
And I'm gonna also take I feel like we all do take Aspinall to win the heavyweight.
Yeah. If Gon does win, that's a huge upset.
I don't know. John Jones tends to
An official prediction.
An official prediction, man.
You gotta stand on this in the next step.
I hate to say it.
Hold it.
But 4 years ago, UFC Dubai, UFC 267, Glover Teixeira versus Jan Blachowicz. Wow, another UFC 267 reference today. We have John Jones and Jan is saying that John Jones left to duck him to fight at heavyweight or to fight or to whatever to do whatever. And Jan Blachowicz was supposed to begin his run. That was his second title defense. Loses.
So make the call.
To Glover Teixeira, a guy that John Jones had beaten 7 years earlier. I think on Saturday afternoon at around 5 o'clock in the afternoon, around this time in a couple days from now, Ciryl Gane and Ngannou, after years of trying, finally is your undisputed heavyweight champion of the world.
Nah, I mean, I guess. I could see what you're saying, but I think I've seen too much of Tom Aspinall. He's like archetype, like 1.0 of modern UFC athlete, high-level athlete, and I think he's next level.
Yeah. So that is all for Pound today. Next week, we will be back with the recap of UFC 321, our Pound for Pound ranking list, and many, many more.
Yeah!
I'm Travis Hayden.
I'm Ethan Bess.
Ryan Deptula.
And this has been Pound for Pound. We'll see you guys next week.